I want us to talk this morning about a dirty word. And it's a word that some of us may want to distance ourselves from because it evokes things we don't want to be associated with, and that is evangelism. And that word is challenging on two fronts. For the first time in American history, even on beautiful sunny days, for the first time in American history, more adults don't go to church than do go to church. More adults don't. And research tells us that 4/5 of those people outside the church have a negative view of the church. 4 out of 5. For most people, Christianity is a part of the problem, not the solution. So that's a challenge, but just as challenging, perhaps more challenging, especially in a context like ours, are those many people who are in church but don't know Jesus. How do you engage that audience? I believe every church must grapple with this urgent question. What is your plan for seeing people in your community who are far from God, moving to the borders of faith, into a relationship of trust and allegiance to Jesus? As important as it is, preaching cannot be the primary answer. Given that most of the people we want to engage will never darken the door of a church, it's a conversation stopper. And for that other group I mentioned, that's just the problem. They've heard so many sermons that they are inoculated from experiencing God in a genuine way. For all of us, where is our urgency for evangelism? For those who know Jesus. And I'm not simply talking about hell, whatever that word evokes in you. It's worth considering that the most kind and compassionate person who ever lived talked about that subject more than anyone else in the Bible. And why would Jesus do that? But I'm also talking about in this life. I mean, if we believe that Jesus is the wisest person who ever lived, that Jesus offers an invitation not only after this life, but in this life to a new and better life, whatever the motivation, churches that care need to care more about evangelism. I believe every church needs a culturally adept strategy for evangelism. And I'm convinced that in the modern West, evangelism is inconceivable apart from recovering hospitality. Now, that's not the word you were expecting because, to quote one of my favorite movies, The Princess Bride, that word does not mean what you think it means. Hospitality. The author Henry Nouwen wrote a whole book on this a few years ago. He wrote, "At first, the word hospitality might evoke the image of a soft, sweet kindness, tea parties, and bland conversations. Since in our culture, hospitality has lost its power, it is often used in circles where we expect a watered-down piety. Still," he continues, "if there is any concept worth restoring to its original depth and evocative potential, it is the biblical concept of hospitality." And the key words in that quote are restore and biblical concept. In her study of hospitality across church history, the scholar Christine Pohl documents that until the 18th century, until 1700, hospitality was considered an essential aspect of authentic Christian witness. For example, in the wake of the plagues that devastated the population of the Roman Empire, houses of hospitality were established all over the Roman Empire to care for the sick and the poor. The first hospital, where it gets its name, was founded by a woman named Fabiola. A Roman woman of great wealth became a follower of Jesus, sold her possessions to make space to care for the poor and the sick, which she did with her own hands. I hope next time you drive by a hospital, you'll remember its roots in the name hospital, a T. What happened? As the pace of life quickened, one writer put it, in a busy country, time becomes precious and hospitality is not so much valued. You know who said that? The great writer Samuel Johnson said that in 1722, 302 years ago, he was bemoaning, oh, we've lost hospitality. 300 years ago, he was lamenting it. How much more true is it today? We have lost our sense of a thoroughly biblical practice that was essential to the spread of early Christianity. Hospitality needs to be recovered as the leading edge for effective evangelism in the modern West. Let me see if I can convince you. I'm going to give you a biblical sketch, a flyover of hospitality in the Bible. I'm going to address a couple of barriers, and then I'm going to give you some pathways that you and I might walk out of here and begin to recover and practice. But let's start with hospitality in the Bible. There's a story in the book of Genesis, chapter 18, of Abraham and Sarah welcoming three guests into their homes. And their homes, their guests turn out to be angels. And that's the biblical story behind a famous verse in the New Testament. This is from the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, verse 2. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Did you know that monasteries arose in the 4th and 5th century as the original protest movement? Believe it or not, they were concerned that Christianity was becoming too mainstream. That after the Emperor Constantine had made Christianity the official religion of the Roman Empire, that it was losing its distinctive witness. So monasteries were established as protest movements, and these houses had a pattern of life called a rule of life to dictate their life together. And the most famous of these rules of life was Benedict's. And the rule of Saint Benedict had a famous line: let all guests who arrive be received as Christ. And they took this quite seriously. If you showed up at one of their monasteries, they had elaborate rules for welcoming strangers as Christ. Let all guests who arrive be received as Christ, with selfless service and genuine sacrifice. Benedict's instruction was rooted in the words of Christ. In the New Testament, there are two passages above all that rooted the early church practice. The first was from the picture Jesus gives in the Gospel of Matthew, how he says he will distinguish true believers from false believers. This is from Matthew 25, verse 35. Jesus says, I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. These words are so famous that we can miss what's so shocking about them. When his people ask, Lord, when were you a stranger and we welcomed you? Jesus responds, truly I say to you, as you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. Please notice that Jesus does not identify himself with the one welcoming strangers. He's not saying, in welcoming the stranger, you're being like me. Rather, Jesus identifies himself with the stranger. In welcoming the stranger, you're welcoming me. Throughout history, our best theologians put themselves to the question, who is the stranger? And I've always preferred the definition of England's greatest theologian, John Owen, who said, the stranger is the one whose story we do not know unless he tells us. The one whose story we do not know. That means you're surrounded by strangers. You may know your neighbor's name, but do you know his or her story? One of my heroes and someone whose life I think is so important for Christianity today is named Dorothy Day, a woman who lived in the middle of the 20th century, formidable intellect. She was converted to Christianity out of a bohemian lifestyle. She shocked all of her friends converting to Christianity in New York City, and she started a hospitality house in a New York City slum. And what pierced her was reading the Gospels, specifically reading this passage I just alluded to for Matthew 25. She wrote in her memoir, there he was, homeless. Would a church take him in today, feed him, clothe him? She continues, I prayed to God he would never, ever let me forget to ask the question, Jesus, is that you? Jesus, is that you? It changed the face of New York City. When you see men and women, homeless men and women walking around the streets of Evansville, or maybe who come here on a Sunday morning, is that our first and is that our controlling question? Jesus, is that you? See, they took Jesus' word seriously. Alongside Matthew 25, another passage from the Gospel of Luke was foundational for the early church's practice of hospitality. It's told in Luke chapter 14. And before we look at that story, pause for a moment. Have you ever noticed, reading through the Gospels, how often Jesus is at a meal? How often Jesus was eating? One scholar says that over 50 times in the Gospel of Luke alone, there are references to food. He continues, in Luke's Gospel, Jesus is either going to a meal, at a meal, or coming from a meal. Jesus was eating so much, you remember one of the epithets hurled at him is that he is a glutton and a drunkard. In the culture in which the Bible was written, meals meant more than sharing food. They were, scholars call them, quote, social boundary markers. Meals brought people together and kept them apart. See, to welcome someone at your table wasn't just being kind, it was a sign of acceptance, a stamp of approval. It still means that today. A few years ago, a book came out, Why Are All the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? See, if you don't think who sits at a lunch table is about more than food, go to any junior high school cafeteria. We know who you eat with says something about you, about them. And that was even more true in Jesus' day. You weren't just welcoming someone into your home, you were signaling their good standing with you. So you can see why, when his opponents wished to discredit this rabbi, this strange rabbi, where do they point to discredit him? To say, you can't listen to this man. They point to the company that he kept. Listen to Luke 15, verse 1, how it opens. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear Jesus, and the Pharisees and scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. Like that was the worst thing they could... Jesus ate with all the wrong people. The socially marginalized, tax collectors like Zacchaeus in Luke 19. The sexually marginalized of his day, like the woman in Luke 7. You see, for Jesus, meals were also a sign, not of exclusion, but of God's welcoming into the kingdom. Jesus used meals as a way not to keep people out, but as a way of inviting people in. People noticed, and it bothered them. One scholar put it, Jesus got himself killed by the way he ate. Luke writes, this is in Luke 14, when Jesus knew they were, quote, watching him carefully, he sat at a table in open view and told this within earshot. This is Luke 14, verse 12. When you give a dinner or a banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you. See, today, if we use the word at all, we associate hospitality with having people over occasionally. But for Jesus, hospitality was about more than having your friends' family over to dinner. The word hospitality comes from the Greek word philoxenia. It's a compound word combining the two Greek words philo, meaning love, and xenos, meaning stranger. So hospitality literally meant love of the stranger. Love of the other. For Jesus, it was a way of turning strangers into friends around an open table. It was deliberately contrasted with a word you sometimes hear today, xenophobia. Fear of the stranger, fear of the other. And even if you've never heard that word before, xenophobia is everywhere in our culture today. We live in a xenophobic culture, fear of the other, fear of the stranger, fear of those not like us. And Jesus says quite explicitly, my people are to be marked not by xenophobia, but by philoxenia, love of the stranger, love of the other, love of the marginalized, enacted around an open table. Jesus was saying, my people look out for the people who are sitting by themselves in the cafeteria, for those who don't have anyone to talk to, and for those to whom no one is talking, the shunned, the stranger. See, open table is the manifestation, but hospitality is about our fundamental attitude toward other human beings. The way Jesus did it was deliberately countercultural. I mean, his meals were culinary sermons. He was enacting that the distinctions that hold sway around all the other tables in our culture, those walls were deliberately torn down in socially disruptive ways by Jesus. This man receives sinners and eats with them. It's a book that came out a few years ago I commend to you called A Meal with Jesus by Tim Chester, where Chester walks through the meals of Jesus and what they have to teach us today. Chester points out that there's a very important verbal formula used only two times in the Gospels, but with deliberate effect to catch the ear. And that phrase is, the Son of Man came. It's used two times. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. That's what Jesus did, his mission. And the Son of Man came eating and drinking. That's how Jesus did it, his method. See, we say today that we live in a culture where people are resistant, if not hostile, to the message of Jesus. But don't you see, Jesus lived in a culture where people were just as resistant, just as hostile to his message. And how did he invite the skeptical into his kingdom? One meal at a time. That was his method. And John Mark Comer summarizes, the way Jesus did it is still the best way. The author Rosaria Butterfield recently wrote a book on the importance of our recovering hospitality in the modern West. She talks about what she calls radical ordinary hospitality. Now, I like how she defines it. Radically ordinary hospitality, those who live it see strangers as neighbors and neighbors as family of God. And I think that's a good working definition of hospitality, turning strangers into neighbors and neighbors into new family. Those who practice it, she continues, recoil at reducing a person to a category or to a label. They see God's image reflected in the eyes of every human being. Those who live out radical ordinary hospitality see their homes not as theirs, but as God's gift to use for the furtherance of his kingdom. They open doors. They seek out the underprivileged. They know, she concludes, they know the gospel comes with a house key. And that's the title of her book. The Bible calls us ambassadors for Christ. Why do ambassadors have nice homes? Because it's a way of representing the realm of which they are citizens. We're ambassadors. We're welcoming. We're hosting. It's not meant to be coercive or manipulative. We are creating space. That's all we're doing. We're making room to get to know the stranger's story, to ask him or her questions, to give what so few people in our culture ever experience, and that's someone to really listen. It's making space to listen. If we want to live like Jesus and become like Jesus, hospitality is the Jesus way. And here's the point. The early church took Jesus seriously on this. And my question is, if it was so important to them, why has it become so marginal and infrequent for us? Well, we have to take up some barriers to hospitality, and I'll just mention three. Number one, we're already too busy, and this sounds like just another thing to do. Well, here's a principle for all of life with God. Think subtraction, not edition. If you've been paying attention, you know there's been a spate of books come out the last few years about simplifying, eliminating hurry. In Cal Newport's Slow Productivity, one of his controlling principles is do fewer things. That's the theme of all these books, do fewer things. So I'm not asking you to add hospitality. I'm asking, what can you subtract? What do you need to start saying no to so you can start prioritizing Jesus' method? Because you do have time. You're already doing this. We're already eating meals. All you have to do is repurpose a few of these to practice getting to know the stranger as far as you're concerned. I mean, I cannot imagine evangelism at Evansville that doesn't involve a lot of conversations over food. Because if you're in Evansville, if you live here and you have a very little interest in Christianity, there is a very strong chance that you have had a toxic encounter with Christians or with Christianity. How can your very understandable questions be addressed except over food and a lot of conversations? When I lived in one of the most secular cities in the world, without exception, the most fruitful conversations I ever had about Jesus with people far from God were around a table. And I get it. Evangelism can be intimidating. What if you're asked a question that you're not equipped to answer? But anyone can make room for hospitality. You don't need any formal training. All you need is a table. And it doesn't even have to be yours. So you do have time. A second barrier, and I'm going to step on some toes here. A barrier to hospitality among us is the idolatry of family among us. Idolatry means you take a very good thing and you place it above the ultimate thing. You place it above God. The same God who tells us to honor our families when he came to earth made it quite clear that Jesus' family, his new family, the church, is to take precedence in our allegiance. That was incredibly controversial in Jesus' day and still is. But when Jesus uses familial terms and the New Testament uses these terms like brother and sister, that is not just a figure of speech. That is a way of saying the church is intended in God's vision to be a new family with God as our Father. And that was even more controversial in a context that was more communal and family-oriented than our own. Jesus' intention is for his new family, as part of prioritizing him, to take precedence over our birth family. Let me tell you practically what that means. It means around your table, you strive to keep an open table with extra chairs at your family events. Memorial Day picnic, Sundays after church, are just as a routine during the week. As part of your routine, you have strangers, you have new people in your home. Sometimes we talk about people with a gift for hospitality. You say, so-and-so has such a gift for hospitality. But did you know in the Bible, hospitality is never listed as a spiritual gift. In all the list of spiritual gifts, you'll never find hospitality. You know why? Because for them, it wasn't a gift, it was an expectation. 1 Peter 4, verse 9 says, be hospitable to one another. It was just an expectation. Be hospitable to one another. And the verse continues, without complaining. And I love that that's in the Bible, because what does that tell you? That hospitality, when you're practicing it, will be complaint-inducing. It will be inconvenient. It will cost you, literally. Someone is going to spill wine on your favorite chair. Someone is going to step on a chocolate chip cookie on your rug. It's a fairly easy question to answer. How hospitable are you? How often do you open your table to people beyond your family and your friends? Step on some more toes. If you're in a community group, do you make it a priority to welcome new people? I mean, it's not meant to be theoretical. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. If you're in a small group, healthy groups grow, and they multiply because Jesus' people know this is not about us, our comfort, and our preferences. It's about making room for people who come into a community who are dying for community. So let's talk about an elephant in the room, and it's not just an elephant in this room, it's an elephant in every church. People come to church on Sunday and they hear these beautiful words about the love of God and the promise of a new community. But then the service ends and we go out alone, separated, isolated, and lonely. It is a travesty that people aren't experiencing the community we hear about from the pulpits. A man who understood this tension was, I mentioned him earlier, Henry Nouwen. He wrote, "In our world full of strangers, estranged from their own past, culture, and country, from their neighbors, friends, and family, from their deepest self and their God, we witness a painful need for a hospitable place where life can be lived without fear and where community can be found." The people are dying for this, for authentic community. Now one continues, "It is possible for men and women and obligatory," his word, "obligatory for Christians to offer an open and hospitable space where strangers can cast off their strangeness and become our fellow human beings." The hospitality is about more than having people over occasionally. Now one calls it a fundamental attitude toward our fellow human beings, which can be expressed in a variety of ways. It just looks like creating space to care, to pay attention, seeking out the people in our culture Jesus would eat with if Jesus walked our streets. And that's the greatest barrier. The greatest barrier to hospitality in Evansville is not our time, it's not our families, it's not our careers. Our greatest hindrance in hospitality is our grasp of the gospel. And that's a third barrier. Our hospitality is thin because our grasp of the gospel is shallow. And I'm including myself in this. There's a journalist named Mike McIntyre who wrote a book a few years back, "The Kindness of Strangers, Penniless Across America." He set off across America with no money, entirely dependent upon the kindness of strangers, and then he wanted to write a book about his experience because what he discovered surprised him. He wrote, "I walk on, wondering how it is that the people who have the least to offer are often the ones who give the most." He tells of a woman with very little who provided him with a generous meal. She told him, "We don't have much, but we don't mind sharing what we have." McIntyre writes, "I think of all the families that take me in. They expose their homes, their possessions, their children. As scared as I am to trust them, they must be doubly scared to trust me." But one woman told him, "You know what scares me more? Not trusting people." She continues, "Because I know what it's like to be hungry. I know what it's like to be hungry. There have been times when I've been down to my last dime, but people have always helped me." Oh, and it floored him what McIntyre found. You know, you hear what this woman's saying? That compassion for the other flows out of solidarity, born of shared experience. That we only come to care about those in need to the measure that we're in touch with our own neediness. And we've experienced provision. See, we'll never recover hospitality as a way of life until we see ourselves as those who were strangers, and yet Jesus welcomed us at his table. If we're not opening our tables, it's because we don't grasp how much we have been welcomed by Jesus at his. Isn't that the gospel? The gospel is that by nature, each one of us was estranged from God, separated and alienated. But the good news is, how did the old hymn put it? "Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God." to welcome you, Jesus became the stranger. He experienced the vulnerability of a homeless infant. He became a child refugee. He was cut off from his own family with no place to lay his head. And in the end, he was a scorned criminal. On the cross, Jesus became the stranger, even to his Father. He experienced feeling cast out, that he might open the door for us. I am the door, to be no longer estranged from God. Don't you see, hospitality is in the very heart of God. Thou preparest a table before me. And Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you. And he chooses a meal as the ongoing symbol of our relationship with him. That's why, in my opinion, the best one-verse summary of hospitality in the Bible is Romans 15, verse 7. Therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you. You know, I've been to churches all over the country. I've never seen that verse on the wall of a church. But to me, that is the best verse in the Bible for the precedence of biblical hospitality. Therefore, welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God. Because pause for a moment and consider how Jesus has welcomed you. While we were yet weak, not interested, even hostile, yet Jesus came to us and he became our gracious host and did more than break bread for us. Jesus calls us brothers and sisters. So can't we, in his name, recover his method for turning strangers into neighbors and neighbors into family? See, I'm not talking about tea parties. I'm talking about hospitality. I'm talking about the gospel. Those who get it know the gospel comes with a house key. If you get it, you know it. I mentioned earlier those who did not know that they did not know the Christ they profess. Well, here's the test. The measure you extend hospitality is the measure you grasp how much God has extended hospitality to you. Do you want to experience Christ in deeper ways and more routinely? Well, here's the principle, and it's true for all of spiritual formation. Only God can change us, the Holy Spirit. It's the Holy Spirit's power, it's the Holy Spirit's credit. But it's our responsibility. And one of the best ways to nourish your faith is to habitually make it a habit. Open your table. Schedule it. Build it in. Make it part of your pattern of life. And here's the thing. You don't have to clean. You don't, except the bathroom. Don't be gross. You do have to clean the bathroom. But other than that, you don't have to clean for people to feel at home. We find healing, hospital, in vulnerable relationships around hospitality. And I believe if we care about evangelism in Evansville, and if you know Christ, you can't help but care about it, that we have to get more urgent about this. I mean, how can we call someone into our community or to leave a community whose practices we might question from our pulpits, like the LGBT community, unless we are offering more support, more encouragement, more acceptance, warmer welcome? I think anyone with their eyes open is willing to admit church is broken. It's broken. I can't imagine any fruitful vision of evangelism that doesn't have hospitality as a leading edge. This is not PhD Christianity. This is ABC Christianity. You can start where you are. There's no better place than to start around a table, turning strangers into neighbors. Just look around. True religion, the Bible says, is caring for widows. Keep an eye out for the elderly. I mean, it is so lonely to be a widow or a widower, to be single in Evansville, or to be a refugee or an immigrant. Just keep your eyes open. Hospitality can look like caring for vulnerable children. You can follow up with the group who's here today offering training, Isaiah 117 House, one of our church community partners. Organizations like this can give you relationships with children and families you'd otherwise never come across. Well, I'm going to close this morning with a story from this community because you have to see it to get what I'm talking about. And every community I'm a part of, I always look for the teachers. And by the teachers, I don't mean the preachers. I mean the people in this community who are from whom I can learn what it looks like to follow Jesus as a way of life. And one of my teachers in this community is Brad Wood. One of the best evangelists I've met in Evansville is Brad Wood. Most of you don't know him because he's quietly behind the scenes living out radical, ordinary hospitality. Through Brad, I got to know Bobby. Bobby was a trainer at Brad's gym. And Brad did what Brad does. He just expressed kindness to a stranger in his orbit, his trainer. A posture of paying attention, listening, asking questions. After a while, as their relationship developed, Bobby said to me, "Rankin, make sure when you tell the story that you stress this, that Brad did not in any way shove this down my throat." He was patient over many months. It got to the point where I had to ask Brad, "Tell me more about this Jesus that I know you know." Because Bobby, by his own admission, didn't have much background in this kind of stuff. And what little he did have, he'd wandered away from. But Brad was so hospitable. Can happen around all kinds of tables. But following many months and many conversations, did you know that today, part of our worship team here at City Church, sitting in the back running the soundboard, is Bobby Cox. The whole trajectory of his life changed because of the hospitality of Brad Wood. And Bobby is not the only friend of Brad's that I've met. I asked Brad once over a table where his passion for Bobby and for people came from, and he got tears in his eyes talking about what Jesus had done for him. As someone who experienced the kindness of Jesus, Brad now looks to turn strangers into neighbors and neighbors into family. And the Bible tells us that when he sees Bobby one day in heaven, he will say to him, "You are my joy and you are my crown." Do you want stories like that in your life? You want to see more stories like this in this community? Start by practicing hospitality. That was the Jesus method. That's how Jesus did it. And the Jesus way, it's still the best way.